Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
New Jersey Transit will have to approve the efficiency of its operations, revisit its rich union contracts, end the patronage hiring that has typified its past, and may also have to consider service reductions or fare increases.
Governor Christie, from his tough love speech on Thursday, among other things there, taking a shot at unions and patronage hiring, union contracts, though, in particular, and the budget crises in New York and New Jersey raise a difficult underlying question. What is the proper social contract between taxpayers and public employees in a changing world? We have reached the point in this country where public employees are much more likely to be in unions than workers in the private sector, and much more likely to have good health benefits and traditional pensions with guaranteed payments for life after retirement rather than 401ks. But how much does that have to change? We will get two views now from Bob Masters, legislative and political director for the Communications Workers of America in the Northeast, which includes many New Jersey state employees, and E.J. McMahon, who specializes in New York City and state taxes and budgets for the Conservative Manhattan Institute think tank and directs their Empire Center for New York State Policy. Welcome back to both of you. Hello.
Thank you, Brian.
Good morning.
Tom Masters, you reacted strongly last week to Governor Christie's address, Bob Masters, forgive me, for the way it characterized unionized civil servants as special interests. Tell us more. What got your goat?
Well, I think that rather than addressing the workforce as, you know, tens of thousands of hardworking, middle-income, lower-income folks who go to work every day providing services that the state completely depends on, witness the snowstorm. We wouldn't have gotten out of the snowstorm if our folks hadn't been plowing the roads. You know, Governor Christie tried to demonize them and to make them really the cause of all the problems in the state of New Jersey, which, you know, we obviously think is a huge distortion. He invoked extremely distorted examples of pension abuses that don't reflect the experience of our members whatsoever, and we don't think it's a constructive approach to the problem.
Of course, your members were plowing the roads, but the question is, how much should they be paid in current wages and benefits for doing so? In that clip we just played of the governor, he referred to rich union contracts. And so you've got an antagonist on your hands, to some degree, in the governor, it looks like. But on the underlying issue, at the most fundamental possible level, does this crisis indicate that we are at a point of rethinking the basic social contract between taxpayers and civil servants, especially with respect to benefits?
Brian, I think that you can't separate that question from the overall question of the general retirement security crisis that faces the entire country, the entire workforce. We now have a situation where the collapse of the private sector retirement security system is cutting out the foundation from what's going on in the public sector. You have a situation where 80% of Americans have no pension. 50% of Americans have no retirement system at all. And the average 401k in this country right now has $45,000 in it, which is, as some commentator pointed out, enough to pay for a couple years of college, not to live on. And so there's no question that there is tremendous pressure against the public sector retirement system. But I think it's part of a general crisis that I don't think will be solved by driving the public sector down to the level of the non-union and private sector.
And listeners, we want your input on this. What should the social contract be today between taxpayers and public employees? Does it need to change? Or is it, as Bob Masters just stated, really the social contract in the private sector that needs to change? 212-433-WNYC. But let's keep this focused on public sector. 212-433-9692. You can call in or you can post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Does the social contract need to change given state budget deficits in both New York and New Jersey, as well as many other places? Does the social contract between taxpayers and public employees need to change? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And E.J. McMahon, here's somebody posting on our webpage about this already, and they write, the traditional draw in terms of compensation of talented workers to public employee positions has been pensions and job security in exchange for much lower salaries than many other careers of consequence. Steady pensions and job security must be replaced by high annual wages and or bonuses, or the only draw left will be opportunity for corruption, as with most counties, and that would cost more. So that's one listener. And now I ask you, how would you characterize the basic social contract that we've had between taxpayers and civil servants the way that that commenter did, and what do you think needs to change?
Well, I guess I'd question the premise a bit. I don't think there is a social contract between the citizenry and public sector unions. The social contract, as most people would view it, is a broad, unwritten agreement that binds us all together, I think, behind the concept that one group will not take undue advantage of another, and that we will all live in harmony. That's sort of the broadest concept of the social contract. The unions have written contracts and collective bargaining agreements, and I think that the issue here is how bound are we to a system of collective bargaining that has basically created a powerful public sector labor cartel, especially in states like New York and New Jersey, that is basically immune to the economic forces that affect the rest of us.
Well, cartel is a strong word. What do you mean by that?
Well, a cartel is the concept of, it's basically another way of saying a monopoly. If you want to talk about transit workers, for instance, you had the tape of the soundbite of Governor Christie at the beginning. In the transit sector, we have one union that represents all of the people who work in the largest mass transit system in the United States, which is New York's MTA, meaning the New York City transit portion of it. All the bus drivers, the people who work in the repair shops, and all of the people who work in the subway system below the high management level are all members of the TWU.
Then the employer is a cartel, too. Then every employer
is a monopoly, and the labor unions are a cartel. That's a bad situation. It's a bad combination, and I don't think it's worked to our advantage. I don't think the concept of a social contract is the one that applies here. Mm. The last time you could say there was something like a social contract between the broad citizenry of taxpayers and public sector workers was in the era before public sector collective bargaining. But no, I don't think there is such a contract now. I think there's simply a set of legal agreements.
What about the way our listener framed it, which is, I think, a lot of the way a lot of experts would put it, that to attract talented employees to public employee positions, the offers through written contracts has been pensions and job security in exchange for relatively lower wages than other jobs of consequence.
Well, public sector workers don't make lower wages than other jobs of consequence. The only types of jobs in which public sector employees make less than private sector employees is specialized technical skilled positions in the white-collar area mainly. The unskilled and blue-collar workers in the public sector make more than private sector workers in wages before you even get to benefits. That's simply not true.
Bob Masters?
Public sector teachers in the public sector.
Brian, what's really clear here is that EJ basically doesn't believe in unions and doesn't believe in collective bargaining. So we're starting from two entirely different vantage points on how you deal with these issues. And so when we talk about the social contract, which I think you referred to at the beginning, you were referring to, I think, a general sense that prevailed from the New Deal until the current era that workers, both in the private and the public sector, should be guaranteed a decent wage, some measure of health and retirement security. That's completely collapsed. And what's happening here in the public sector is that because private sector unionization is now down to 7%, most workers in the private sector have no pension, have declining pension have declining retirement security of any kind, are more and more dependent on Social Security, and are paying exorbitant amounts for health care, which is why we're having a roiling debate in this country about health care.
So let me ask you the question another way, and let's assume for the moment that we don't have to bust all the unions in order to have satisfaction for the taxpayers. But people ask, if I, in the private sector, don't have a defined benefit pension anymore rather than a 401k, if my job in the private sector doesn't come with unions anymore, so I have to work cheaper than my father did, why should the teacher or the cop or the toll collector have these things that cost me as a taxpayer more in benefits than my boss is paying me at my private company.
Right, and that's exactly the question that people are addressing, and that is the problem that we're dealing with in our relationships with the state in New Jersey and elsewhere. First of all, let me point out that we have made very significant sacrifices and changes in our pension plan to try to address those questions. We've increased the pension contribution of our members in New Jersey from 5% to 5.5%, as have teachers and local government workers all across the state. We raised the retirement age from 55 to 62. In terms of direct compensation, we postponed a raise. We took 10 unpaid furlough days. And we have given up a total of $450 million in compensation over the last 3 years. It's not like state workers are not sensitive to those problems. The question, I think, that has to be raised in response to what you said, Brian, is if we eliminate the defined benefit pensions of public workers, will the living standards of the average worker actually improve? I think not. In fact, the reason that we have a pension crisis in New Jersey is because the state legislature, irresponsibly for 10 years, failed to contribute to the pension system. And the consequence is that the accrued liability to the pension is now even bigger than the regular cost of providing that pension.
And again, I don't want to negotiate out the particulars of the contract. I want to keep this on the underlying question. And, EJ, the other way to ask the question, as Bob raised it earlier, from a worker's point of view is, thank goodness there's one sector of the economy holding the line on decent wages and benefits when everything else is going to pot in the redistribution of wealth from worker to owner. You go, public unions, you know, some people will say, until something else in the labor market brings private sector workers back to some kind of reasonable power balance with employers. Why shouldn't ordinary private sector workers who also pay taxes look at their interests like that?
Well, That in fact is not their interest. I mean, he's setting up a straw man here, or a series of straw men, that there's an extreme, that we have a choice between the very lavish benefits that public sector workers have and no benefits at all on the extreme far end of the private sector. There is a midway point, and I think most people would agree that people are not prepared well for retirement now. I think a lot of 401k plans are bad plans, and that things need to be done to improve them. But that doesn't get to the basic issue of why, for instance, in New York State, to give you one example, public sector workers in state government last year received a 3% across-the-board salary increase plus longevity steps and are due to receive another 4% next year in the teeth of the worst recession in 70 or 80 years, when in the private sector, those people who've managed to hold on to their jobs are getting no pay increase. And this is a nationwide phenomenon. Compensation levels for private sector workers have barely budged. Compensation levels for public sector workers have continued to rise. Even when, in those storied days of the New Deal and its aftermath, when the old line industrial union members, pick the UAW for instance, had defined benefit pensions, and UAW members still do, you realize the UAW pension at its peak, at its richest, is not as generous as a typical public sector pension. That's a fact. There's never been anything in the private sector, by and large, as generous as what most state and local government workers get in the way of pensions and benefits. I think most New Yorkers, no matter where they stand on the spectrum of workers' issues or labor benefits, might be surprised if they don't already know it, that, for instance, municipal workers in New York City, if they choose the basic health plan, don't contribute a thing to their health insurance. Zero. They have no skin in the game. Is that fair? Now, if you talk about the social contract, I think that what shreds the social contract or strains it is the notion that we have one class of workers that simply is impervious to larger economic forces. In the private sector, private sector union members, and I'll use an example, the construction workers in New York City, they rework their deal with the large developers in order to preserve jobs in the teeth of the slowdown. That's the type of thing that most public sector unions refuse to do.
Let me get a couple of calls in here, maybe one from each side before we run out of time. Jerry in South Plainfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, hello, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you.
You know, every time I hear this topic, it makes my blood boil because I came from the corporate world and I became a teacher for the two reasons why most, I would say, become a teacher, or for the benefits and the job security. Now, if you take that
not,
away...
Not because you wanted to teach and have relationships with kids and that kind of
that
thing?
That too.
Okay.
That too. It's not only because of that, but it is an incentive. Like most people go into the
So, but go ahead, for job security and benefits.
Okay, if you take that away, okay, what you will have, okay, you might have higher salaries. However, the Board of Education and the districts, their sole purpose is to save money for the townspeople. Or if the teachers on the top of the pay scale, okay, in order to cut the budget, they would be cut out. I mean, they do it now.
What is the top of the pay scale in your district?
In my district, it's, I believe after 15 years, it's $75,000.
So EJ would say probably that's not so low. Plus, you have this...
No, it's actually a great salary. I'm
extraordinary,
not complaining
about the salary. Yes, extraordinary job security and benefits that the private sector can't match, and the taxpayers can't afford it anymore, and the state and the localities have gotten into more and more debt over the year, which is now coming due.
Yeah, but what is the solution? Are we talking about money, or are we talking about education here? Because what you're going to have is inexperienced teachers in the classroom, because if you get rid of the higher-paid teachers on the pay scale, what you have is an inexperienced teacher in the classroom.
And that's the question. We're talking about both education and money and looking for the balance. And Jerry, thank you. And David in Englewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi. I just want to make three quick points. Number one, what we have here in this country and in New Jersey is the public sector is growing much, much more than the private sector. The private sector, without a private sector, you cannot fund the public sector. Number two, you cannot have a system like in New Jersey where the teachers and other employees contribute zero toward their health benefits, whether they have, and that includes the spouse and the children. If you have 10 kids in Englewood working for the Board of Ed, you don't pay anything toward their health care, nor for your spouse.
David, thank you. And we're really just about out of time, but give me a last word, Bob Masters from CWA. Can we live with that kind of, and I still think it's a social contract as well as a written contract, but can the public afford that kind of social contract and written contract with teachers or any other public employees anymore?
You know, Brian, this is obviously a huge topic. It would take a long time to sort out. I mean, we've had massive tax cuts at the state level for the wealthiest taxpayers. We've foregone tremendous amounts of revenue. In New York, it's estimated to be $16, $18 billion a year. EJ is just wrong. The private sector pensions for Teamsters and auto workers far exceed the pensions that our state and local government workers get, which are on average less than $3,000 a month. They're not exorbitant. Our members pay for their health care. Our members pay for their health care, about 10% of the cost of premium. I do think there's going to be adjustments. I do think that we have a crisis in funding public sector benefits that we're going to have to address. But we need to do it without demonizing, without name-calling, without simplifying the problems that we face in the overall retirement security
system. EJ McMahon, you'll get our last 30 seconds.
Well, just about every factual statement he just made was incorrect. But just to go on, I think that the problem here is that the benefits and wage levels that we have in the public sector are to an increasing degree unsustainable. We can't afford to pay for them. That's the numbers make that obvious in our state and local budgets throughout the country and especially in the Northeast. And so something's got to give. This can't continue. The choice to the unions is going to be, what are you going to give up? Jobs, or are we going to rework the deal so that we retain jobs at a more affordable level?
E.J. McMahon, who specializes in New York City and state taxes and budgets for the Manhattan Institute and directs their Empire Center for New York State Policy. Bob Master, and forgive me, I think I've been pluralizing your name. You're Bob Master, right?
I forgive you, Brian.
Legislative and political director for the Communications Workers of America in the Northeast, which includes many New Jersey State employees. Thank you both. Obviously, this is a continuing conversation.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, what parents are willing to see their kids go through to train for the Olympics. Stay with us.